Welcome to Orchard Conversations, a podcast brought to you by the Orchard community.
Hey friends, happy new year. Listen, I hope that you had a great Christmas. Ours was phenomenal. It was one of the best Christmases we've had in a while. Speaking of Christmas, this Sunday, it officially marks the end of the Christmas season and the beginning of the church season known as Epiphany. You know, Epiphany is that showing forth, the revelation, the light bulb moment of seeing and experiencing God's presence and plan through Jesus. You know, you can sort of think of an epiphany as that moment when you're standing in a dark room and someone flips the light on and suddenly you're able to see what is there, what's been surrounding you the entire time, right? It was all there. It was right in front of you. You just couldn't see it because the lights weren't on. It took someone turning the light on for it to be revealed to you. Well, on this first Sunday of Epiphany, we approach what's known as Baptism of the Lord Sunday. And in this story, God, you could say, sort of flips the light on in a big way. Matthew chapter 3, we're told that Jesus comes to the Jordan River to be baptized by his cousin, John the Baptist, who frankly was not very eager to baptize Jesus because he had this idea that Jesus had this unique and special relationship with God and all of that. But Jesus said, no way, I'm not going to have that. I insist on being baptized. You know, it was almost like Jesus was saying, hey, look, listen, John, this is not just about me. This is even more so about you. And anyway, so we're told that Jesus rises from the waters of baptism and that a dove descends out of the sky and there's the voice of God that's heard and says these words, Matthew 3:17, this is my son, my beloved, with whom I am well pleased. Quite a significant moment for Jesus, no doubt. I mean, here he is in this muddy water before he has said or done anything very Jesus-y, right? He hasn't been tempted in the desert. He hasn't performed any miracles. He hasn't preached a sermon. He hasn't told a parable. He hasn't washed any feet. He's really just starting out. And yet, friends, God is pleased with him. I mean, think about that. First, before he does anything amazing, he is utterly and completely loved by God. This is my son, my beloved, with whom I am well pleased. Now, the important thing for us to understand about this story is that this is not just a story about Jesus's epiphany of who he is. No. Listen, there is a story in here about our own epiphany of who we are as well. And that epiphany is that, friends, you and I are also God's beloved. So what does that mean? What does it mean to be God's beloved? Well, in the New Testament, the Greek word beloved is the word agapetos, which is a word that conveys a deep, unconditional love. In affection, you know, a sense of being cherished and valued. And so you could say that being God's beloved means that we are deeply and unconditionally loved. And that love is a love that is totally and completely independent of our acceptance, our acknowledgement, our actions, our embrace of that love. We are loved simply because we were created by God. You see, the words that God spoke to Jesus in that moment were not spoken because, well, now Jesus finally got baptized and, you know, so now I can really love him or I can really be proud of him and declare him my beloved. No. What God was doing in that moment was simply pointing out what was already true. That's right. You are my beloved. That's who you are. So, how about you? Do you know who you are? I mean, do you know that you are God's beloved? Do you know that you and all other human beings who've ever lived have an inherent worth and dignity that comes from being created in the image of God? Do you know that you are deeply loved by God? and valued by our Creator, regardless of your circumstances, your choices, your actions. And do you know that there is nothing you can ever do to change that reality? Nor can you ever create it or manufacture it or earn it or achieve it or attain it. You know why? Because you already have it. You already have it. You are God's beloved. It's who you are. It's who you have always been, and it's who you will always be. You see, essentially, what we're talking about here is identity. That's right, identity. Who you are at your core, the truth of your life. I love Nadia Boltz-Weber, her take on this. Listen to this. She writes these words. Identity. It's always God's first move. Before we do anything wrong and before we do anything right, God has named and claimed us as God's own. But almost immediately, other things try to tell us who we are and to whom we belong. Capitalism, the weight loss industrial complex, our parents, kids at school, they all have a go at telling us who we are. But only God can do that. Everything else is temptation. She goes on and says, maybe demons are defined as anything other than God that tries to tell us who we are. And maybe just moments after Jesus' baptism, when the devil says to him, if you are the Son of God, he does so because he knows that Jesus is vulnerable to temptation precisely to the degree that he is insecure about his identity and mistrusts his relationship with God. So if God's first move is to give us our identity, then the devil's first move is to throw that identity into question. So if what God said about Jesus, this is my son, my beloved, with whom I am well pleased. I mean, if that was already the truth of his life, well, then why did God have to say it? I mean, if it's true, why did God have to proclaim it? Well, I think it's because we all need to hear it. We all need to feel it. We all need to experience it in order to believe that it's true. I ran across something Richard Rohr wrote about the other day, and he was talking about how he served as a chaplain in Albuquerque jails for almost, I think it was 14 years, almost 15 years. And he talks about how he's convinced that the reason people make great mistakes in their lives is because they've never heard what Jesus heard on the day of his baptism. They have never heard another human voice say to them, you are a beloved son. You are a beloved daughter, and in you I am well pleased. And he talks about how if we've never had anyone believe in us, take delight in us, affirm us, or call us beloved, then we don't have anywhere to begin. And he talked about how there's nothing and exciting to start with. And so we end up spending our entire lives trying to say to ourselves, I'm okay, I'm wonderful, I'm great. But we don't really believe it. The word has to come from someone greater than us. So with that said, look, I'm convinced, friends, that most of us, maybe not all of us, but I think most of us have actually experienced this divine love of God, or have been given a picture of this divine love of God at one time or another in our lives. But chances are, it probably didn't happen in some mystical, miraculous way, right? I doubt there was a dove that descended from the sky or a voice from heaven that declared us the beloved of God. No. More than likely, it happened, it occurred through the words, the actions, and the love that was shown to us through someone or something. So I'm curious, where in your life have you experienced or been reminded of this kind of love? Where in your life have you experienced love that is consistent, that is unconditional, that not perfect love, but love that makes you feel known, makes you feel seen, makes you feel chosen and special. As I was putting some thoughts together this afternoon, I was listening to my dog Mika snoring under my desk, where she loves to sleep right by my feet. And as I thought about this question, where have I experienced unconditional love? It dawned on me that right there at my feet is unconditional love, my dog Mika. Man, and those of you who have dogs, you know what I mean. Not sure I've ever experienced that from a cat before, but that's a whole different topic. I'm joking. I'm sorry. Anyway, all joking aside, I think if I look back over my life, there have been many experiences where I have witnessed or been shown or been reminded of God's divine love. Two big ones that stand out to me. I'm almost hesitant to share these, and I'll explain why in a minute. But the first one has to do with my parents, who adopted me when I was just a baby. Parents who showed me through their words, their actions, and their lives a beautiful reflection of God's love. Again, not perfect love, but beautiful love and true love and consistent love. You know, one of the things I remember my parents saying to me from the very beginning was, "Scott, you know what? You were adopted." What that means is that we chose you. Not most parents don't get to choose their children, but we chose you. So there was a real sense of being chosen that I experienced sort of by osmosis, or just by being told this and it being a part of the language that my family used. The second experience is one that occurred, 4 or 5 years ago. Some of you heard the story about me finding my birth family. You know, my entire life, I knew nothing about them at all. And I won't get into the whole story, but I'll just say that the whole thing was a hugely profound experience. But perhaps one of the most powerful moments in all of that, in that entire experience, occurred on the day after my 43rd birthday, when I had the incredible privilege of meeting my 99-year-old Greek grandmother, my yaya, who, by the way, as it turned out, I discovered lived less than 10 miles from my home. But I'll never forget the day that I met her, walking into the room of this complete stranger and being so nervous, and walking up to her and her grabbing a hold of me and beginning to weep. And saying to me, my boy, I have known you. I have loved you, my boy. I have loved you since the day you were born. And she didn't want to let go of me. She kept saying, come closer to me, come closer. And she held me and said, my boy, my boy. And I'll never forget at one point, as tears just were streaming down both of our faces, my yaya grabbing my face, looking me in the eyes and saying to me, God has kept me alive for this moment. Friends, that truly was one of the most profound experiences of love that I think I've ever known in my entire life. Of being embraced and accepted, being named by someone who I had never met, or never known, or didn't even know existed. I suppose, you know, the more I think about it, it really wasn't all that different than what I experienced on the day that I was placed in the home of two strangers, my mom and dad, who chose me as their own and showed me that same kind of love. Now, I say that I'm hesitant to share those stories with you because I don't know, you know, when I say, you know, what are some moments or times you've experienced this divine love, or where you were given a picture of this sense of being God's beloved, because those examples they're pretty big ones. They're pretty profound. They're pretty unusual examples. And so perhaps those are really far off from where or how you've experienced that kind of love. Or maybe you have a story that is even more miraculous or more profound than those or whatever. Regardless of what it is for you, I would love for you to think about your life and where you have experienced it. Maybe it was in big, profound ways, or maybe it was in small actions or moments. You know, even the limited and sometimes broken love of those who share our humanity can often point us to the truth of who we are. And so I would love for you to think about this. Where has it been for you? Because here's the thing, friends, you know, I think that what gives our beliefs power and life is when we actually experience the divine. And because we live in a physical, tangible world, well, it's usually through physical, tangible relationships and experiences that we are truly changed, and that the things that we believe actually come alive to us and for us. I mean, it shouldn't surprise us. Isn't this the message of the incarnation, what we just celebrated at Christmas, right? I mean, God becoming flesh, God moving into the neighborhood. That is Emmanuel, God with us, showing us through flesh and blood and death and life, the truth of who we are, that we are God's beloved. And the beautiful thing is when we claim and constantly reclaim the truth of our lives, well, you know what happens is we soon discover within ourselves a deep desire to reveal to others the truth about their lives. Right? And in other words, once we deeply trust that we ourselves are precious in God's sight, well, then we're able to recognize the preciousness of others and their unique place in God's heart as well. I want to leave you with a blessing. Jan Richardson wrote this a couple years ago, and it's called Beginning with Beloved. Open your heart now. And let's listen together. Begin here, beloved. Is there any other word needs saying? Any other blessing could compare with this name, this knowing? Beloved, comes like a mercy to the ear that has never heard it. Comes like a river to the body that has never seen such grace. Beloved, comes holy to the heart aching to be new, comes healing to the soul wanting to begin again. Beloved, keep saying it, and though it may sound strange at first, watch how it becomes part of you, how it becomes you, as if you never could have known yourself anything else, as if you could ever have been other than this. Beloved. Beloved. Friends, I hope that this starts a rich conversation, or at the very least, a time of rich contemplation for you around this idea of being God's beloved. If you're gathered with friends or you're at one of our table gatherings, I would love for you to have some conversation. A couple questions that might make some great discussion points are ones like these. What does it mean to you to be God's beloved? Here's another one. Why is this idea of being God's beloved, why is it sometimes hard for us to believe this and embrace it for ourselves? And then lastly, I would love to point you back to a question I asked a minute ago. Where have you experienced that kind of love before? I hope you'll take some time, even if you're just alone, to journal maybe a little bit and think about those questions. Friends, we're so glad that you joined us today, and we'll look forward to seeing you again next weekend. Thank you for joining us. I hope that you have a beautiful day, and know that you are loved.
Thank you, Scott. Friends, as we close our time together, I want to read this poem to you. It's by Jan Richardson, one of my favorites, and I invite you to go ahead and pause, take in everything that we've talked about together today, what you've heard today, what you felt today. Let it sink in as you listen to these words. May the path that Christ walks to bring justice upon the earth, to bring light to those who sit in the darkness, to bring out those who live in bondage, to bring new things to all creation. May this path run through our lives. May we be the road Christ takes. May we be the road Christ takes. I love that. Friends, it is so good to be with you. There are a few things that I want to remind you of before we go today. The first is that next week, January 14th, is our second Sunday, the first one of 2024. So if you are local to the Aurora, Illinois area, we will be gathering at Society 57 at 11 a.m., and we would love to see you there. The second thing is that I want to remind you that The Orchard is a fully independent organization and relies on our community to continue helping people become who they were created to be. To those of you who support this work financially, thank you. And if you would like to help us keep this work going, you can give online, you can give via the app, or you can send a check to our P.O. box. Finally, friends, I leave you with this benediction. Go in peace. Love and care for one another in the name of Christ. And may the Spirit of God, which filled John and Jesus, fill your hearts, souls, and minds. May the power of God, which upheld them, strengthen you for each day. And may the love of God, which directed their every action, be your guiding light and your shining star, both now and forevermore. Amen. Go with peace.